Chapter 3. Tragedy Strikes. However, there was a delay in the answer to that telegram. 2 days of impatience followed. On the evening of the 2nd, there came a letter from Hilton Cubitt. Another long line of dancing men had appeared that morning on the garden bench. He included a copy of it, which is here reproduced. Holmes bent over this new drawing for some minutes. Then he suddenly sprang to his feet with a look of surprise and concern on his face. "We have let things go far enough," he said. "Is there a train to North Walsham tonight?" I turned up the timetable. The last had just gone. "Then we shall take the very first in the morning," said Holmes. "Our presence is most urgently needed. Ah, here is Mrs. Hudson with our expected telegram."
"Thank you, Mrs. Hudson."
"Yes, Watson, this message confirms for me that our simple Norfolk friend has found himself caught in a dangerous web." So, indeed, it proved to be. I'm sad to report here the strange events that came to pass at Ridingthorpe Manor. The station master hurried toward us on our arrival in Norfolk.
"I suppose that you are the detectives from London," he said.
A look of annoyance passed over Holmes's face.
"What makes you think such a thing?"
"Because Inspector Martin from Norwich has just passed through. But maybe you are the doctors. She's not dead, or wasn't by last accounts. You may be in time to save her yet, though it be for the gallows."
Holmes' face was dark with anxiety.
"We're going to Ridingthorpe Manor," he said, "but we have heard nothing of what has passed there."
"It's a terrible business," said the station master. "They are shot, both Mr. Hilton Cubitt and his wife. She shot him and then herself, so the servants say. He's dead, and her life hangs by a thread."
Without a word, Holmes hurried to a carriage. During the long 7-mile drive, he never opened his mouth. Seldom have I seen him so depressed. At last, the driver pointed to 2 old wooden roof peaks seen above a group of trees.
"That's Ridingthorpe Manor," he said.
As we drove up to the great front door, I observed the grounds. Beside the tennis court, I noted the black tool house and the garden bench with which we had such strange associations. A well-dressed little man came down the steps to meet us. He introduced himself as Inspector Martin of the Norfolk Police. He was quite surprised when he heard the name of my companion.
"Why, Mr. Holmes, the crime was only committed at 3 this morning. How could you hear of it in London and get here so soon?"
"I expected it. I came in the hope of preventing it."
"Then you must have important evidence of which we do not know. They were said to be a most happy couple."
"I have only the evidence of the dancing men," said Holmes. "I will explain the matter to you later. I am anxious, though, to use the knowledge which I possess to see that justice is done. Will you allow me to join in your investigation?"
"I should be proud to feel that we were acting together, Mr. Holmes," said the inspector.
"In that case, I should be glad to hear the evidence and to examine the house and grounds without delay."
Inspector Martin had the good sense to allow my friend to do things in his own fashion. The local doctor, an old white-haired man, had just come down from Mrs. Hilton Cubitt's room. He reported that her injuries were serious, but there was a chance she would live. The bullet had passed through the front of her brain. It would probably be some time before she could recover. Certainly, the doctor concluded, the bullet had been fired at very close quarters. He would not, however, claim to know who had shot whom. There was only the one gun found in the room. 2 bullets were missing from it. Mr. Hilton Cubitt had been shot through the heart. It was equally possible that he had shot her and then himself, or that she had been the criminal, because the gun lay on the floor between them.
"Has he been moved?" asked Holmes.
"We have moved nothing except the lady. We could not leave her lying wounded on the floor."
"How long have you been here, doctor?"
"Since 4 o'clock."
"Who sent for you?"
"The maid, Saunders."
Was it she who gave the alarm?
She and Mrs. King, the cook.
Where are they now?
In the kitchen, I believe.
Then I think we had better hear their story at once.
The two women told their story clearly enough. They had been awoken from their sleep by the sound of an explosion. This had been followed a minute later by a second one. They slept in connected rooms, and Mrs. King had rushed in to Saunders. Together, they came down the stairs. The door of the study was open, and a candle was burning on the table. Their master lay on his face in the center of the room. He was quite dead. Near the window was his wife, with her head leaning against the wall. She was horribly wounded. The passage, as well as the room, was full of smoke and the smell of powder. The window was shut and fastened on the inside. Both women were positive on the point. They had at once sent for the doctor and for the police. Mrs. Cubitt was wearing a dress. Mr. Cubitt was in his dressing gown, over his night clothes. Nothing had been moved in the study. So far as they knew, there had never been any quarrel between husband and wife. They had always looked on them as a very united couple. In answer to Inspector Martin, they were clear that every door was fastened on the inside. No one could have escaped from the house. In answer to Holmes, they both remembered that they were conscious of the smell of powder from the moment that they ran out of their rooms on the top floor.
"I direct that fact to your very careful attention," said Holmes to his professional colleague.
Holmes then went to the study. It was a small room lined on three sides with books. A writing table faced an ordinary window, which looked out on the garden. Our first attention was given to the body of the unfortunate husband. His disordered clothes showed that he had come quickly from his bed. The bullet had been fired at him from the front. There was no powder marking either on his dressing gown or on his hands. According to the country doctor, the lady had stains on her face, but none on her hand.
"The absence of powder on her hands means nothing," said Holmes. "One may fire many shots without leaving a sign. I would suggest that Mr. Cubitt's body may now be removed."
"I suppose, doctor, you have not recovered the bullet which wounded the lady?"
"An operation will be necessary for that, but there are still four bullets in the gun. Two have been fired and two wounds found. Each bullet seems accounted for."
"Perhaps," said Holmes. "Then what about the bullet which has struck the edge of the window?"
He had turned suddenly and was pointing with his long, thin finger. His eyes were on a hole which went right through the lower window frame, about an inch above the bottom.
"By George!" cried the inspector. "How did you see that?"
"Because I looked for it."
"Then a third shot has been fired," said the country doctor.
"A third person must have been present. But who could that have been, and how could he have got away?"
"We are about to solve that problem," said Sherlock Holmes.
"You remember, Inspector Martin, that the servants said that they could smell gunpowder as soon as they came from their room. That suggests that at the time of the firing, the window as well as the door of the room had been open. Otherwise, smoke from the guns could not have been blown so rapidly through the house. A breeze in the room was necessary for that. Both door and window were only open for a very short time, however. The candle was not put out. Because the window had been open at the time of the tragedy, there must have been a third person in the affair.
That person stood outside this opening and fired through it. Any shot directed at this person might hit the frame. I looked, and there, sure enough, was the bullet mark."
"But how did the window come to be shut and fastened?"
"The woman's first thought would be to shut and fasten the window, but, hello, what is this?"
It was a lady's purse which stood on the study table. Holmes opened it and turned the contents out. There were 20 50-pound notes of the Bank of England, held together by a rubber band, nothing else.
"This will be important in the trial," said Holmes. He then handed the bag with its contents to the inspector. "Now consider again this third bullet. Clearly, from the damage seen of the wood, it was fired from inside the room. I should like to see Mrs. King, the cook, again. You said, Mrs. King, that you were woken up by a loud explosion. When you said that, did you mean that it seemed to you to be louder than the second one?
Well, sir, it wakened me from my sleep, so it is hard to judge, but it did seem very loud.
You don't think that it might have been two shots fired almost at the same instant?
I couldn't say for sure, sir.
I believe that it was undoubtedly so. Let us see, Inspector Martin, what evidence the garden has to offer. A flower bed extended up to the study window, and we all broke into an exclamation as we approached it. The flowers were trampled, and the soft soil was stamped all over with prints. Large men's feet they were, with quite long, sharp toes. Holmes hunted about among the grass and leaves like a hunting dog after a wounded bird. Then, with a cry of satisfaction, he picked up a small metal object. "I thought so," he said. "The gun ejected the bullet. Here it is, the third bullet. I really think, Inspector Martin, that our case is almost complete. I have the threads of this affair all in my hand. Even if this lady should never recover consciousness, we can still reconstruct the events of last night. Thus, we can ensure that justice is done. First of all, I wish to know whether there is any inn in this neighborhood known as Elridge's." None of the servants had heard of such a place. The stable boy threw a light on the matter, however. He remembered that a farmer of that name lived some miles off, in the direction of East Ruston. "Is it a lonely farm?"
"Very lonely, sir."
"Perhaps they have not heard yet of all that happened here during the night?"
"Maybe not, sir."
A curious smile played over Holmes' face. "Saddle a horse, my boy," he said. "I wish you to take a note to Elridge's farm." He took from his pocket the various slips of the dancing men. With these in front of him, he worked for some time at the study table. Finally, he handed a note to the boy, with directions to put it into the hands of the person to whom it was addressed. I saw the outside of the note, addressed in bent, irregular characters, very unlike Holmes's usual precise hand. It was addressed to Mr. Abe Slaney, Elridge's Farm, East Ruston, Norfolk. "I think, Inspector," Holmes remarked, "that you would do well to call for extra men. If I am correct, you may have a particularly dangerous prisoner to convey to the county jail."